tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 18th of March 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, the fallout from the terrorist attack in New Zealand is still continuing. We've got a few news reports today that are following on from that. The first one is the response in Britain. It seems that the UK government and the police are trying to exaggerate what would have been called a hate crime before, and they're now calling it far-right terrorism. Detectives are investigating an alleged far-right terror attack in Surrey. I mean, it sounds really serious, doesn't it? After a teenager was stabbed amidst a spate of racist incidents across Britain, which came in the wake of the New Zealand massacre. Apparently someone has got a cut hand, basically. That's what this was. That's what the injury was. Politicians and police have condemned the attacks and said extremism has no place in British society. The 19-year-old victim was said to have been attacked by a man armed with a knife and a baseball bat, who it is claimed was heard shouting racist comments. That's all. He was heard shouting racist comments. Now, I wonder if there are any anti-white comments made during all the stabbings of white people that have occurred. None of them have been classed as terrorist incidents, yet this has been classed as a terrorist incident because the man may or may not have used racist epithets during the heat of the moment. The incident took place in Stanwell at around 10:30 p.m. on Saturday, and the victim was rushed to hospital with what police said were non-life-threatening injuries. A 50-year-old local man was arrested a short time later on suspicion of attempted murder and racially aggravated public order offences. Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu, the UK's head of counter-terror policing, confirmed the incident had all the hallmarks of a terror event inspired by the far right. Prime Minister Theresa May tweeted, "My thanks to the emergency services for their handling of the terrorist incident in Stanwell. My thoughts are with the injured man and his family and friends. Vile, hateful, far-right extremism has no place in our society." Well, I'm not so certain that that was far-right extremism. It could very well have just been a fight and somebody said something anti-Muslim or anti-black, the sort of thing that happens when tempers are frayed. But it does seem as if they're going to exaggerate things to try to play up this idea of the far-right threat. Basically, they're doing exactly what the mosque murderer wanted to happen. In his manifesto, he said that he wanted there to be a clampdown on gun laws. And of course, that's exactly what New Zealand are doing. And he said that he wanted people to see the difference in the way that this attack was reported and the way that the Muslim attacks are reported. And of course, every time there's an Islamic attack, we're told, we're not going to let this divide us. We don't want our moderate Muslims to be tarred with the same brush. And of course, what we're hearing now is, it's all nationalism. It's all the people that are talking about nationalism. They're the ones responsible for this. How does Tommy Robinson feel about this? And of course, we're also told that it's nothing to do with Islam, nothing to do with the Quran. when it's an Islamic attack. And now we're being told that this is all because of people talking about nationalism online. So huge differences, opposite ends of the spectrum, basically. Of course, we also had Oasis making that song, "Don't Look Back in Anger, no matter what happens, don't get angry when the Muslims kill lots of white people." Well, I'm still waiting for a Pakistani rap group to make a song about not getting angry at the nationalist community for this, because it's the actions of one individual and not the actions of all. So basically, everything that this killer wanted to happen in the fallout of his attack, it seems as if the governments of the world are wishing to oblige him. We've also had a very brave politician in Australia who basically pointed out that we mustn't forget that there have been a number of Muslim terror attacks against white people and that this was a retaliation for that. And he pointed this out, which we've mentioned before on here. And he was egged over the weekend and he turned around and thumped a little oik that did that. I mean, fair enough, disagree with the man, but to physically attack him from behind, you have to expect that you're going to get thumped. I mean, it could have been anything that smacked him over the back of the head. He did completely the right thing in turning around and trying to disable whoever it was that did that from attacking him again. I mean, it could have literally been anything that was smashed over the back of his head. So he did the right thing to turn around and punch the guy and prevent him from attacking him again. And he's also been standing up for what he said. Anning continued to stand his ground on Sunday, telling a specially arranged press conference that while the media had twisted his initial statement, he did not feel the need to apologise for what many decried as an ill-timed diatribe. What people took out of context, I think, was that in the same press release, I said that the countries that allow a large-scale Muslim immigration invariably have escalation in crime, violence, and terrorist attacks, Anning said on Sunday. And all of that is verifiably true. That is what people see happening, and that is what we are being told isn't happening. It's just a conspiracy theory. There hasn't been an increase in crime. There hasn't been an increase in terrorism. Terrorism is just part and parcel of living in a big city, as Sadiq Khan tells us. But of course, Islamic terrorism doesn't happen in Japan. And this was a response to Islamic terrorism. Continuing with what he said, "Now, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a statement of fact. And for some reason, I have upset a lot of people, including a Mr. Morrison," the independent senator said, effectively doubling down on his previous remarks that had landed him in hot water. In a pointed swipe at Morrison and his government, Anning accused the Prime Minister of being a hypocrite for not paying as much attention to the plight of Christians facing Muslim attackers. "In the last 30 days, there have been 122 terrorist attacks by Muslims on innocent Christians and other civilians in 21 different countries, killing 859 people. And there has been a deafening silence from Mr. Morrison and from the media on those points." Just think about that. 859 people killed by Muslims in 21 different countries, 122 different terrorist attacks carried out by them. And nobody's saying anything about this. We actually have a British politician who has highlighted this. Kate Hoy, who I believe is a Brexiteer from Labour, and we have to give her credit for pointing this out. This hypocrisy, going wild about this and not paying any attention to the terrorist attacks carried out by Muslims. This idea that far-right terrorism is the biggest threat that the world is facing is a nonsense. The facts tell us different. Of course, what they try to do is they try to exaggerate other things to big up this so-called far-right terror threat. They will lock people up, for instance, people that were accused of being members of National Action. They didn't even put any stickers up. I mean, the people that were arrested for putting stickers up on a terrorist legislation, those stickers have been put up when the group was still legal. And we have a lot of other people that have been are in jail at the moment who did nothing but talk on chat rooms. They didn't even make plans to carry out terrorist attacks, nothing like that. They were just talking in chat rooms. And yet they are listed as terrorist plots that have been foiled. There are terrorist plots by unbalanced individuals against Muslims and against blacks, which obviously we condemn here at Radio Aryan, but they have to be put into perspective. They have to be put into perspective. And if you think there's been 122 terrorist attacks by Muslims on innocent Christians in the last 30 days, and in the last 30 days there's been one terrorist attack against Muslims, that means that the far-right terror threat is only 1% of the actual terrorism threat, just 1%. Anning argued that Australia is on course to repeat the fate of European countries like France, Belgium, the UK and Germany, which underwent a spell of terrorist attacks inspired by radical Islam, if Australia does not stop Muslim immigration. And again, that's not a threat. That's just pointing out what has happened everywhere else. It's a risk aversion strategy, basically. Well, we should be stopping Islamic immigration and we should be sending the ones here back to where they come from. Otherwise, we're just setting ourselves up for war, basically. You can't have two opposing ideologies, two opposing peoples, two completely biologically different peoples living within one territory and have everybody getting on. I mean, it just defies logic to think that would be possible. I mean, even if it was just that people spoke a different language, it would be impossible to get on because you wouldn't be able to understand what the people were saying that were next to you. You wouldn't be able to understand how they were trying to communicate to you. So there's obviously a potential there for communications to be mistaken and for people to think the opposite of what somebody else is saying. It's just absolute chaos. That's all diversity is. It's absolute chaos. And the fallout from that now is terrorist attacks. And we can see an increase in this in the last 70 years that we've had immigration. It started off with muggings and drug dealing and then burglaries and then gangs. And then murders, and then shootings, then stabbings, then grooming gangs, then sex slavery, then acid attacks, and now we've got terrorism. And you don't have to be Albert Einstein to see the pattern there and understand what's going on. Everyone can see that. And when our politicians refuse to speak about it, people just think, well, we must be under an occupation then. They must be planning this. They must be doing this deliberately because they're covering up for it and they're pretending that it's all just a conspiracy theory and 2 + 2 = 5 and black is white. And when people have no other outlet to feel that they're actually doing something to put the situation right, there are those who are unbalanced that will go out and do stupid things like this guy out there in New Zealand. And the government are doing themselves no favours by saying that we should be clamping down on nationalist commentators and people talking on social media, because that's the last outlet that people have. And if that's taken away, the only recourse left to people to try and do something about this is to take violent action. It's crazy to try and shut down this debate. Nationalists should be debating this. Politicians should be held to account for what they've done. This replacement agenda of theirs. Don't forget that replacement migration is exactly what the United Nations calls this migration that's going on, this supposed conspiracy theory. That the term itself comes from the United Nations, saying that we needed to replace the European population because Europeans aren't producing enough children. And it's no good politicians going on the television and cheering on the fact that we're going to be a minority in our own countries in 30 years' time, and then again pretend that that's a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. People can see this going on around them, and they're very worried about it. And our representatives are no longer representing us. And this Fraser Anning, I mean, what a hero he is for speaking up and actually speaking to the fears that the white Australians have. He's a very brave man, and he's refusing to back down, unlike other politicians that we've had that will immediately, they get accused of racism or whatever, they'll start backtracking and groveling and apologizing. And Fraser Anning, he's not having any of that. Asked whether he regrets the timing of his statement, Anning said he did not regret anything. The lawmaker, who was expelled from his most recent party over his right-wing views, also defended getting physical with the teenage protester. He got a slap across the face, which is what his mother should have given him long ago, because he's been misbehaving badly, Anning said. Throughout the conference, Anning repeatedly denied that he was condoning the attack, labelling Tarrant's infamous manifesto the work of a lunatic. I don't agree with any of that lunatic's views, that killer's views. I would never agree to any of those. I mean, that's pretty equivocal. He's not supporting the attack. He's not supporting the killer's views. He's just pointing out that it's a retaliation for all the terrorist attacks against us carried out by Islam. And he's pointed out that 99% of terror attacks have been carried out by Muslims across the world in the last 30 days. Australian MPs have drafted a censure motion against Anning that is expected to be backed by a majority in April. But Anning laughed off the measure, saying, "What is Mr. Morrison going to give me a flogging with? His lace hanky? I hope it's not too painful." A change.org petition calling for him to be kicked out of the Senate had racked up over 1 million signatures as of Monday. There is no place in Australian government for neo-Nazis. There is no place for bigotry. There is no place for hate speech, it states. Well, let's just have a look at that. Is he a neo-Nazi? No, he's not a National Socialist. I haven't heard him talking about support for Hitler or anything like that. He's not a neo-Nazi. He supports Israel. He supports the Jews. So that's wrong to call him a neo-Nazi. They say here there is no place for bigotry. Well, what is bigotry? Bigotry is refusing to allow somebody else to speak, refusing to allow somebody else's opinions to be heard. That's exactly what bigotry is. And it's not Fraser Anning saying it's other people that should be censored and we shouldn't hear what they have to say. It's these people signing this petition rather, that are saying that he should be silenced and he shouldn't be allowed to voice his opinions, which he's been elected to do. They are the bigots. And then they say there's no place for hate speech. How is it hate speech for him to point out the terror attacks that Muslims have carried out against Christians? That's just fact. It's perfectly fine when the mainstream media give out a report, but if it's Fraser Anning that gives out that report and reports those statistics, then it's hate speech. It's like when the Jews brag about bringing in gay marriage, about changing the free speech laws, about advocating for immigration. When they do it, that's absolutely fine. When E. Michael Jones does it, oh, that's anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, when E. Michael Jones says that those are all things that the Jews are doing and quotes them saying it. Responding to the petition, Anning said that he is not sure that all signatories are from Australia. I doubt very much myself that all the signatories are from Australia. Adding that quite a lot of people have told us that they are happy for me to stay where I'm at. Well, I'm certain that a lot of Australians will be very happy that they've actually got someone speaking up for them. I mean, this Fraser Anning seems to be one of the best pro-white advocates that we've actually got that are actually in government, that are actually in a position to speak our concerns. Anning denied that he was deliberately adding fuel to the fire by choosing to attend a show in Queensland on Sunday where he had his own booth. I was happy to be there. Why should I decline the invitation? Anning said. I'm not certain what show that is that he was there at, fanning the flames of the fire. I'm sure lots of people will be going there to tell him that he has their support and not to back down. And I would certainly encourage people to send him emails and send him support for what he has said. Now, let's just have a look at some of the recent Muslim attacks. I just grabbed these from my Twitter feed. We've got one here from the Philippines, Jolo, Philippines. Two bombs minutes apart tore through a Roman Catholic cathedral on a southern Philippine island where Muslim militants are active, killing at least 20 people and wounding 111 others during a Sunday mass, officials said. That was on January the 22nd. We've got a tweet from Mark Collett. Muslim militants kill 120 Christians in Nigeria in the last 3 weeks. I wonder why the mainstream media haven't been talking about this. And I think that's the same news story that Kate Hoy was referring to. And just today in Utrecht in Holland, a load of people have been shot on a train. Apparently there's been multiple gunmen. The news are releasing very little information on it, but the Dutch Parliament have met at their equivalent of what we have over here in Britain, which is called COBRA, and they have met to discuss this terrorist incident. So it is a terrorist incident. A lot of people have been shot on a train, and I think I'd lay a safe bet that it was Muslims that carried that out, but we'll have to wait and see. So the fallout is continuing from this tragedy over there in New Zealand, and we can just hope that cooler heads prevail. Obviously, people like Gerard Batten, they've been tweeting about putting this in perspective. Katie Hopkins, she made a particularly good post on her Facebook about it the other day. And I do think the reaction from the mainstream media to this, I mean, that's going to wake a lot of people up. Far more, it's going to wake up far more people than any of our podcasts actually do. I mean, people are radicalized by what they see happening. I mean, that's what the guy said in his manifesto. And this is how people get red-pilled, basically. They just see what's happening around them. They don't have to follow somebody on Twitter or listen to some right-wing personality to see that all the white people are being replaced, to see that Islam is given a special preferential treatment on the news and on the television. Again, you don't have to be super intelligent to work this out. And if there is nobody there talking to that, if there's nobody there discussing it or debating it, then people are going to go and do crazy things. So it's the worst possible thing they could do is try and come out with more censorship. Anyway, we have got some other news stories today. We've got one here continuing on the discrimination against white people at universities. And we talked about the universities quite a lot recently, actually, and with this drive to get more Negroes into university, and they've actually got far too many of them there now. Universities have been accused of failing working class white boys as the number of students from black and ethnic minorities soars. A drive to increase the number of non-white teenagers in further education has paid off, with figures spiraling 15% in just 3 years. But the statistics have fueled fears that white males have been left behind, as the number from that background fell by 7,600 to 590,765. Data from the Higher Education Statistics Agency shows that black and minority ethnic students are now in the majority at more than 20 universities in England. And remember, they're not supposed to be more than 15% of the population, but they're now the majority at more than 20 universities in England. And nationally, non-white students are vastly overrepresented in some subjects. For example, 60% of ophthalmics degrees were awarded to Asian students in the last academic year. Chris Millward from the Office for Students said, "White British men from disadvantaged backgrounds are among the groups least likely to access higher education. We fully expect universities to target white working class males as part of their work on access and participation." Well, good luck with seeing that. All we ever seem to see from these universities is a drive to get more black and minority ethnics there. Nick Hillman, the director of the Higher Education Policy Institute, added, "The challenge we must all now grapple with is ensuring that a focus on some disadvantaged groups doesn't leave others behind." Well, how can you say that the blacks are disadvantaged when they've got all these policies to try and get them into university? They've got free travel to the appointments. They've got free tuition. They've got instances where they don't actually have to have the same high standards as the whites. They've got quotas there so that if whites and blacks have got the same exam marks, it's only going to be the blacks that are taken on and not the whites. There are many groups that fall behind, including white working class boys. The new figures show that the number of British black and minority ethnic university undergraduates rose from 377,000 in 2014 to nearly 437,000 last year. But over the same period, the number of UK white students fell marginally down by 725 to 1,417,000. But the intake of white males dropped significantly. So that tells us there that the black and minority ethnic students are actually now a third of the population at the university. And their numbers, according to the census figures, should only be about 15%. They certainly shouldn't be 35% of the university intake. They should only be 15%. So there should be a drive to reduce the black and minority ethnic students and encourage the whites. But of course there isn't, because you can never have enough diversity. Once they have the same numbers that they have as a percentage of the population, they don't stop. They just call for more. They call for more of it, and they just concentrate on particular ethnicities or protected characteristics that they want to have more of. And we see that with the BBC when they're massively overrepresented with transsexuals. They have like over 500 transsexuals working for them. About 15% of their staff are homosexual. And then they say, oh yes, but we need more lesbians. We haven't got enough lesbians yet. So they don't say, well, actually, we need more straight people. We need more white people. They say, oh, we need more lesbians. But taking it back to university and with this big drive to get blacks into university, 50% of them drop out once they're there. 50% of them just drop out. So you've got all those wasted resources wasted on giving them tuition, giving them free transport to get there. And then at least half of them just drop out once they're there. And the ones that actually stay, only half of them actually get top marks and top degrees. Whereas 80% of the white students, they get top marks, they get top degrees, which is what you would expect from the average IQ level. But of course they say, oh no, this has got to be racism that's causing this. We'll have to change the curriculum so that blacks are more likely to succeed. But if you're going to change the curriculum to make it so that blacks are more likely to succeed, the only way to do that is to lower the standards of the curriculum. Lower the standards of it. Then you'll get more blacks succeeding. But of course, then standards will just lower in every career that, or placing that, these students actually go to. This is why we're told that some students now can't even read or write. They're getting to university and they can't even read or write because they've been pushed to be given these top marks, even though they're not actually capable of doing the studying. Separate figures from Oxford University, obtained following a Freedom of Information request, reveal that of the entrants from the poorest postcodes in the UK last year, more were from ethnic minorities, 71, than were white, 63. Now, because whites have the higher average intelligence, they are likely, even if you got them from a poor postcode, they are going to be more likely to excel at the university. But they don't want the whites that are going to excel. They want blacks from the poorest postcodes, who really are not going to be likely to succeed. As I say, 50% of them drop out, and only 50% of the ones that are left are actually going to be getting top marks. So only 25% of them are actually, you're actually going to get your money's worth from educating them. You're actually only going to get the reason why you have these universities is so that you can educate people and they can innovate and so that they can add to what the country has. And you're only going to get that out of 25% of the blacks. So that's a bit of a waste of money there, isn't it? 3/4 of the money spent on getting blacks into university is wasted. And the very people who could benefit most from going to university, that there's nothing for them. There's nothing to encourage them to go to university. That's before you even get into the fact that it was white people that invented the universities, that created them and built them for their posterior, for their descendants. They weren't built so that the rest of the world could educate themselves. They were built so that white people could learn about our glorious history, which they're now being told is something that we should feel guilty for. A recent report from the National Education Opportunity Network revealed in the majority of English campuses, less than 5% of the students are from poorer white households. White youngsters in receipt of free school meals were the least likely of any group in Britain to study for a degree, after even those from traveller families. So the group least likely to study for a degree is the group most likely to actually get top marks in that degree. That's the state that modern Britain is in. That's where we've got to by thinking that diversity is a strength. And all the education secretary, Damien Hines, all he has to say about it is there is a risk of certain groups feeling as if they've been left behind. So he's saying it's not actually a fact. It's just a feeling. It's just whites. They just feel a little bit as if they're being left behind. It's not a feeling. It's a fact. It's a fact that whites have been disinherited, that whites are being displaced in the universities. And it's a fact that the people that are supposed to represent us in Parliament are representing the interests of the people that they have brought in to replace us. That's a fact. It's not a feeling. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to